This is the Lean Into Art Cast.
Whether it's illustration, cartooning, UI design, or presenting, it all comes down to telling your story, communicating your ideas. But it ain't for the faint of heart. But let's lean into it. Okay, here we go, Rob. Are you ready? I'm ready.
I'm ready, Jersey.
Okay. Yes, we have to call each other by our name. So, welcome to the first Lean Into Art podcast, video podcast and audio podcast. For those who are listening to the audio after the fact, this was recorded originally in video in a piece of software called Adobe Connect. And you can find the video version at leanintoart.com, right?
Yes, you will.
Yeah, so I guess we should start by introducing ourselves. Anybody who's watching this after the fact probably knows who we are, but you know, it's just it's good mojo to, you know, you once made the case to me in some of the other podcasts that I do that I don't make a very strong effort to point people at who I am and where I come from. I just start talking about my subjects and why. What's the result of that? What happens when you don't establish your credentials or point people at where the resources are, where they can find you?
Well, let's see. On one hand, I do think it's kind of it can be a bit endearing and humble, right? Where you can see, well, this person cares a lot about the topic, but then, well, you delivered so much useful information on this topic that maybe I want to follow up with you. Maybe I am curious. Well, where is your website or your portfolio or that thing you were talking about? And well, I remember the one guy's name, but not the guy who was talking about anyway. So it's good to share it with who you're. Yeah, it's. We are.
Yeah. And especially when you have Slavic names like mine or German sounding names like yours, where they'll be like Stenzinger. How do you spell that? Right. Drozd.
What is that? The alphabet and then shake it up.
So I'm Jersey Drozd. I am a teaching artist and a cartoonist. And I also do a lot of audio shows about making comics and illustration and storytelling and things like that. I've been teaching for about 6 years now. I just realized I've been saying like 4 to 5 years for a couple years now. So I guess I'm up to 6 now. I taught a lot of different places. I teach at universities, teach at the public schools and at libraries. One of my bragging rights is that I did a 2-day workshop for the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C., teaching teachers how to use comics to teach curriculum-based content. So I know my way around this stuff a little bit and, started up a couple events. You know, one of the co-organizers of the Kids Read Comics Celebration, kidsreadcomics.org, a yearly event in Michigan where it's sort of like a convention with hands-on workshops all day long, and I serve as the head programming guy. I don't have an official title yet. I got to get that. I want to get my title so I can get the little card to put on my door, you know, but programming director or whatever. So, and then across from me on the video screen is Mr. Rob Stenzinger.
Well, hey, yep. Thank you, Jersey Drozd. Well, let's see. I'm Rob Stenzinger, and I do comics at artgeekzoo.com and babieslovecomics.com, and I've been recently getting into doing workshops that teach things that I've been consulting with and doing professionally over the years, mixing comics and user interface together, for example, or joke telling and comics for another example. But not as old hat at it as Jersey, but I'm very excited about getting out there and doing more of it. And Lean Into Art is one of the venues where I'll be doing some of that stuff as well. Let's see, what else do I do? Oh yeah, and I'm kind of passionate about making video games as well. And I like to mix that in with the different things I do. It's even more fun when you get to have it all. Everything, you know, so if you like peanut butter and you like pizza and you like bananas, you can put it all in one sandwich and enjoy it even more all at once.
And then you're called Gonzo from The Muppet Show.
Well, that might be appropriate.
Yeah. But,
depends on the day, I suppose. I suppose my form of Gonzo is far less visually exciting. Because when all that comes together, it's like in a code editor and in like, you know, visual software and via Photoshop and all this kind of stuff. So
years ago, yeah, I got a Gonzo action figure, and on the back of the card, it had like a little bio about him. And in the bottom, it said pet peeves. And he said art without pain. Do you agree with that philosophy? Do you go all that far down?
Not like in a masochistic kind of sense, but I think when you're doing something that you really care about, that chances are you're somehow struggling in some way, shape, or form. That would be incidental, not part of the point, though. And I and that's cool. Other artists that pursue their interests can make it about that experience, right? Where for me, maybe it's just, or my own stumbling blocks that as I work through when I try to create a given project, right? Like, finishing Guitar Fretter, definitely faced a lot of different, challenges with that. But,
Guitar Fretter, I don't know. I think I might've stepped on you when you were talking about that earlier. What's Guitar Fretter?
So I made this video game just a little over a year ago now, and have made some updates since, but it's called Guitar Fretter, and you get to learn the note positions on a guitar fretboard while playing an action puzzle video game.
So, very cool. And you just celebrated your first year anniversary of having built the game and released it. So congratulations for that, Rob.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So, okay, segue. Art without pain is like food without taste, and also talking about putting effort into things, and that leads us into this Lean Into Art thing that we're doing, and why we're recording it in this Adobe Connect software, because it's not just so we could see each other's faces while we do it, but it's also to demonstrate what this thing's going to be. I'll let you take the lead on this. What are we going to do with this Lean Into Art thing in a vague sense, or just find the words for it. What does this thing stand for?
Wow.
So which will tie into our topic, of course, I'm sure.
I think it'll be a natural fit. So what we're doing and how we're doing it, it's all kind of mixed together, right? So you have, Jersey's years of bringing art-related materials and comics and storytelling to live audiences, right? And so we're working in teaching creative topics, but not just to live audiences and not just in a physical venue, right? We're bringing it to an online school, essentially. So Lean Into Art is like a quick label for this online school, which has a spirit of, by really putting ourselves and immersing ourselves into the learning experience, by reflecting on what we learn and setting our intentions, and then we observe them as we go through different workshops or courses, whether they be one day or 1 week or 6 weeks even, right? Provided through this online school, we can track our journey as we grow as artists and as we grow as teachers. So we want to bring together a group of artists interested in growing and evolving their skills in a variety of areas that connects them with each other and with teachers that are very passionate with continuing to grow and change as artists as well, because, teaching is a transformative experience as much as applying yourself to a learning topic. So I think that's it in a nutshell.
I think so. I think this is the natural progression of stuff that we've been working on our own for years now, in terms of documenting process, sharing observations and points of view on the creative arts, doing things like the Art and Story podcast for 4 years, doing things like the Comics Are Great podcast for about a year now. Audio can only go so far. It's broadcasting, right? And I've been doing all this local stuff, all these local events like Kids Read Comics and classes. I do, yearly events like the Comic Book Academy, the Graphic Novel Academy. And those are wonderful interactive experiences, really rich learning experiences, both for me and the students. And it's time to bring that to the internet now, start to work on the global version of what you and I have been exploring locally through events. Rich interactive learning content online. That's what this Adobe Connect thing is all about right here, is that we've been messing around with this. This is what we're going to be using. If you're watching the video, there's this cool whiteboard underneath our video player right now where both Rob and I can interact with it. And there he is. writing whiteboard on there. And to the right of our video screen is a PowerPoint player where you can take a presentation and you can cycle through it while you talk about it. So, you know, for instance, what we're looking at right now is a slide for one of my ongoing workshops. And this is the point where I'd say, I've been doing this for 17 years. And over the course of that time, I've had to learn a lot of different things like anatomy, learning to draw the human figure from lots of different angles and fabric folds. That's really hard to learn how the clothing interacts with your body. And then I click the next slide and I, you know, a few years ago, I created a graphic novel called The Front. In it, I introduced Jared the Abominable Snowman. You can see that there's an attendee list. You can see how many people are logged in. And then underneath that, it's a chat client. And there's more modules that we can add on as we need to. But what we're proposing to do is create rich interactive classes, but tailor them to, because we're inviting teachers to be a part of this too. It's not just going to be me and Rob. It's going to be a bunch of other people who we want to bring in to lead a variety of different kinds of classes, not just comics, not just illustration. Think computer coloring. Think UI design, make your storytelling awesome. That's a workshop that Rob's led for the Kids Read Comics event and at the Up Fair in 2010. All different aspects of being an independent content creator these days, and in a workshop environment where the teacher is as eager to learn as the students are, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But I just also wanted to highlight the fact that it's not just going to be interactive workshops, although that's where I get most excited, is you can also lead talks, right? You can beam yourself in, you can get an audience surrounding you, and you can do a PowerPoint presentation like what I'm looking at on the upper right here. Cycle through your slides, talk about what's going on. And I can actually, I'll just demonstrate this real quick for the purpose of the video. I can make this thing bigger as I need to, right? We can have this take up more of the screen, right?
Yeah, it's very slick.
Yeah, and then on the fly, while we're doing this, I can also shrink it down. So, I mean, if anybody's looking at the slide right now going like, oh, gee, how are people going to see that? Well, you can rearrange these tiles very easily and intuitively. So you can just do a presentation followed by questions and answers at the end. People can raise their hand. You can let people's audio be piped in so they can actually ask you a question there. So you could just do a talk, a presentation, a fully interactive class, or even time-shifted stuff where you do a presentation / demonstration that people can download after the fact and watch. So the really cool thing that I think, you and I have been working on this for about 6 months now. Is that right? Seven months?
Since roughly the beginning of this year.
Yeah, wow. So we've been really crunching hard on this idea of how to make this thing adaptable to a lot of different kinds of teaching styles, because not everybody wants to do the fully interactive workshop, and not everybody wants to do the simple presentation style. You know, both ways speak to different learning modalities too, after all. So I'm super excited about that. I'm super excited that Adobe Connect is providing us with this option to do this so, you know, intuitively, and it seems so far to be pretty flexible.
Yeah, I think this is a good base for us to start, and we'll be integrating other services as we move along, and we'll share a lot more of that news over time, because there's just a lot of fun stuff that we have planned for the service of Lean Into Art, and what's it like to be a student of it, and what's it like to be a teacher and be a part of this community, with what kind of forum experience we want to bring about, what kind of other cool add-ons and whatnot too. We'll leave some of these things to tease for later podcasts and whatnot.
One of the things you said to me on multiple times in lots of different locations, both on podcasts and off the air, is iteration, right? Where this thing's going to be iterated. We're on 1.0 for this thing as we roll out the launch, the big launch in November, which I guess we could just say the name now, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's say it. Let's do the big announcement.
I don't remember which one of us came up with it. I guess it doesn't matter. But yeah, it's going to be called 30 Classes in 30 Days. So for the month of November, we're proposing to lead an art workshop of sorts, either a presentation, a time-shifted class, or a hands-on interactive class every day for the month of November. And Rob and I will be facilitating the entire thing. So every teacher who participates, Rob and I will be teaching classes, but then also any teachers we invite in, we will be there as their support staff for every class. And then more details to come on that as we get closer to September. But for this initial, you know, talk, I think it'd be really interesting to define a good learner, because a good teacher is a good learner, and a good learner becomes a good teacher, right? That's the cycle we're trying to build here, after all.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not meant to be some hidden, subtle magic in this whole process. It's come aboard and let's experience classes together, and we and other teachers will be sharing learning experiences with you. But as you come on as someone who is initially a student, we're hoping that you eventually do teach and share that. A lot of schools have that built in as well. Well, I guess, okay, a lot of martial arts schools have that built in, where you come in, you progress, and then you help share what you've learned, which is sort of the ultimate test of learning, right? Can you put your own voice and your own experience into that that solutions and that space of whether it's, you know, some kind of, you know, aspect of visual design or some basic web programming or any, you know, planning a story in so like three acts or what have you, just anything that you've come through that experience of a learner that hopefully you're and building up to that as you go. And it's not like you would at the final day of your first class, then you would be asked to then present that class the following day.
Right.
It's not that wild and intense, but you know, build up over time, get some experience, and you know, we'll have a community of people of different interests. So that's not forced either. So it's not like that's assumed, where everyone that signs up, there's that many more teaching artists in the world, but that'd be kind of cool.
There's another real powerful benefit to this kind of attitude of training students to eventually teach is ownership of knowledge. A really good teaching friend of mine, I've talked about her a million times, her name is Mary Jo, and she was my master's course or doctorate course in teaching comics classes. And she gave me this hint one day. She said she told me to do this in a classroom, and I've since used it over and over again. It's super effective to get kids, and this is aimed at young people, but I find this also works with adults, is you want them to understand that this is their knowledge. All I did as a teacher is draw it out of them. All I did was put words and classifications on stuff they knew intuitively how to do, and maybe some of that stuff was stuff they didn't really know. But you want them to internalize it. You want them to own it. And so at the end of a 10-week course, I said to my students, I'm like, well, I've had a wonderful time working with you guys, but I'm off to another school now to teach some more kids how to make comics. And, you know, here's the thing. These kids have never made comics before. They don't even read comics. They're really nervous about this. So I'm wondering, what advice would you give them to make them feel more at ease about diving in and doing this comic stuff? And then the kids start repeating stuff that I said in the classroom, but they're saying it in their own words now, you know? And they're saying like, oh, well, you don't have to draw well to be a good cartoonist. You have to understand storytelling. I'm like, oh, really? Could you explain that concept? I'm like, well, you can use stick figures to tell a story if you really need to. And as long as you understand that big panels equal long time or big panels equal emphasis, that's what's really important. And then I stop and I go, wow, that's a really sophisticated thought. Is it okay if I borrow that and use that in my classroom? I'm like, oh, sure. And now I'm learning from them. It's a modeling exercise. It's a modeling exercise to get the kids sort of like review the material. But it also creates this sort of sense that they're teaching me now. They are the masters of this content, and I'm taking it to the next town, and I'm going to learn a few things from them. So that's one aspect of it for me too, is that when a good learner goes on to teach because they understand that this is their knowledge after that experience, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And what's interesting is that's a nice way to approach it, and not where, you know, I gave the extreme example of that a given student, you're not expected to then turn around and teach a class the next day. Right. But what an approachable way to just share some ideas of what you found valuable. So you know, you went through this investment of time, as we all did. And what would you then advise someone now that's just about to embark on that same journey? That's really, that's very manageable and useful, and yet is completely the idea that they are now the teacher all at the same time.
Right, right. Yeah, I've bestowed upon them the mantle of expert. You guys are the experts now. Teach me, right? And I mean, that is, again, like I'm talking about it, that's like a simple modeling exercise that isn't exactly what we're talking about, but it relates to what we're talking about. This idea that a good teacher, in my opinion anyway, and I'm not going to necessarily say that I meet all these criteria, but I aspire to all these criteria, but a good teacher is the kind of person who can be caught off guard by a really interesting thought and let the whole class be sidetracked by the idea. You're not a nutty professor about it. You know, you're not going off the rails and like suddenly you're talking about quantum physics when you're supposed to be talking about storytelling or something. But the best teachers I've seen are the kind of teachers who can hear a simple wondering aloud, like, what about the color blue? And they can stop and go, yeah, what about the color blue? You know, and go there. They can let themselves be sidetracked because they're just as curious to get to the bottom of this subject as the students are. The opposite of this, in my opinion, is the teacher who says, I'm here with my 27 years of experience and you're all going to sit down and take some notes. I hope you got your laptops open because I'm going to talk real fast and there's a lot of material to cover. And at the end of this, you're all going to be, you know, experts in the field like I am, right?
Sure. Or we'll leave the weak ones behind. And this is, this is an act of a master who isn't going to be, you know, holding your hand kind of thing. And it's not necessarily that style and choosing to deliver the learning materials in that way. It's not necessarily a coddling or something. Like I just kind of positioned the anti-view, right? I guess I was looking at it where the opposites, where you have the very experienced teacher that does not care to, that speaks in a very authoritarian way versus sharing the experience of the learning with everyone. Right. So, like I heard a teacher friend of mine say it was, instead of being the sage on the stage, they're the guide on the side.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. It rhymes and it's a good point too.
Yeah. Was it Conan O'Brien who said that anything that rhymes has an intrinsic truthfulness to it?
Yeah, exactly. Because at least pulled off rhyming. It must be important, right?
That's true.
You wouldn't rhyme something that was useless.
Rub-a-dub-dub.
Well, there's some depth in that.
Wow, man. I think you just blew my mind. So, I mean, I guess, you know, this is a point both of us have drilled at before in past discussions, but it's worth repeating, is a sense of curiosity, a sense of sort of earnest curiosity about a subject and really wanting to know it. And but at the same time, understanding that knowing it doesn't mean command of it. Knowing it means that it's always going to get more sophisticated and complex the deeper and deeper you go. Right? Does that make any sense? You know, it's hard to explain that to somebody, this idea that you never know it all. So you just try to know as much as you can, knowing that you'll never get to that perfect finish line place.
Well, and everyone who is open to being curious, it typically has their own way of being curious, right? So like you can talk about going more in depth into a topic, or you can talk about the interesting connections among different topics.
Yeah.
Which is often a place where I love to spin my wheels or explore, however you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Just finding interesting connections in, you know, between the things you already know or disciplines or creative pursuits that you're curious about, right? Or you're just getting to know.
That's a good point. Yeah. Cause you can go 1,000 feet up, you can get into pure theory. You can down to the center of the earth and get into like one microscopically tiny point and really focus on that. You can spread across all the continents. Right. And see like, oh, how is Russia similar and distinct from the United States? Right. Let's compare and contrast and find out where the overlaps happen. Find out who has the different strengths and weaknesses in different ways. Right. When would it be appropriate to use Russia as the ambassador to the aliens? When would it be appropriate to use the United States as the ambassador to the aliens? To try to make a really crude, clunky, rusted out tricycle with a broken wheel metaphor for this thing. Was that a metaphor within a metaphor?
It was, yeah. You're lifting some heavy metaphor weights there. Oops, another metaphor. So yeah, it is interesting that everyone's curiosity can go in their own different direction, which is what's going to make it different for everyone who's studying and everyone who's teaching that given topic. But then being caring about learning and caring about growing past your current experience, basically, is, I would say, they probably all share that common interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then leads to curiosity and leads to more discovery, which leads to more, you know, now you maybe have moved and explored a little bit further, and then all of a sudden now there's more to be curious about, but there's also more to share too, right? So
right. And another distinction I think of a good teacher versus a weaker teacher is, I'm going to throw you a curveball. We did not discuss this beforehand, okay? And we'll see if we can wrap our brains around it. The idea of a spirit of, I want to say, joyful curiosity, not cheerful, joyful, because joy can be expressed in a lot of different ways. You can be Lieutenant Worf on the bridge of the Enterprise, and he has a certain sense of joy when he defeats an enemy or when he feels that he's done a really good job of organizing the items in his quarters, versus the sense of, I'm trying to think of a silly character like Q. You know, Q has a very different kind of sense of joy, but it's both joy.
Where everyone is his complete plaything at his ultimate whim.
Yeah. But yep. So what I'm driving at here is that I've seen teachers work where they have a sense of panic. Oh, the room's out of control. I once was in a classroom. I was doing a classroom visit, and it was right after lunch, 30 boys in a classroom right after lunch, and it was getting close to summertime too. So the energy level was super high. These were not kids. There were a good number of kids who were not ready to sit down and quietly draw for me, right? And the teacher started to get a little bit uncomfortable with the volume level and with the energy level. And she's like, okay, kids, settle down. Well, I didn't want these kids to feel like comics was a laborious thing that they had to attend to. I wanted them to experience it in the same kind of pleasure that I have with it. It's fun. I mean, yeah, it's work, but it's always fun. So I grabbed these obstreperous kids and I said, well, I'll tell you what, you don't seem to want to sit down. So why don't you come to the front of the room? Let's construct a scene together, class. Everybody came up with a scene. Okay, these two boys walk into the room. They say this. The other character says that. And then this action happens. And I had the boys, who were very energetic, act out the scene. And then I would say at the right moment, now freeze. Okay, that's your panel, everybody. Everybody who's sitting at your desks, you're going to draw this scene. These boys are going to be our model for us. They got to be big show-offs, but they were part of the learning experience. They got as much out of that as the kids who were drawing it. It wasn't important that they draw it as much as they understand. It's this whole idea of static moments and picking the right static moment. And then I turned it over to the class. And I said, now you guys, when the boys are acting out the scene, you have to yell freeze at the moment where you want them to freeze. And now they're picking the moments. They're deciding what's the moment that's useful. Now, when this happened, the room got very loud, because the kids were all laughing, the show-off boys at the front of the room were all laughing, and the teacher was terrified. And she said to me afterwards, she pulled me aside and she apologized to me for the energy level of the room. She said, I'm really sorry. I'm like, what are you sorry for? Now, what I'm getting at here is this idea of a joyful person, a person who is, I hope that's not a lame word to use. I've been guilty of that in the past, but...
It's all right. I think you're in the lame zone. No, I'm not. But I don't think you've crossed the line yet. You know.
Okay.
There's a threshold that you're dancing inside. No, whatever. It's good. So joyful.
I'm walking a thin line today, but the person who is operating on a sense of like a joyful enthusiasm for it, and I mean, you know, again, joy is different from person to person, acknowledges that there's no roadblocks to getting this learning experience done. Let's find out what can happen with this. Let's improvise. Let's play. And the person who's not operating out of a sense of joy, out of a sense of fear that we have X that we have to accomplish today, and if we don't do it according to this lesson plan that I have in front of me, it ain't gonna work, and I failed as a teacher, right? Whereas sometimes just being playful and working with what you got can get even more accomplished than going around the room and saying, hey, you know, pay attention or we won't get through the work if you don't pay attention. You know, that kind of idea.
Sure.
So I think that kind of teacher kind of creates an environment where learning itself is a pleasant and fun experience, not saccharine, right? You're not candy coating it in order to, like when people say like, oh, it's wonderful that kids read comics because then they can move on to real books. You know, it's not like that. You're not like candy coating or sugary sweetening something so they'll take their bitter pill, but you're acknowledging the fact that learning itself is a fun thing because there's so many ways to do it. Does that make sense?
Well, and the conditions with the conditions that you go about engaging in learning, that can be flexible, right? So by being, so you're saying joyful, I'm hearing possibly just open to possibilities, right?
Okay.
Flexibility. Where I think you could go about, I think you could be an angry person and still do what you described.
Because
I could see like, well, I could see entering that situation and just going, oh no. But then saying, okay, this is a challenge. How do I do this?
Yeah.
We've got to have fun here. It's completely frightening because of how different or whatnot it is. But then just embrace it and go with it, believing that the plan as it was gets tossed and there's a way to still do it right here. The possibility still exists no matter what situation we're in to do some learning. Right.
Yeah.
And I think you can have joy with it, or I could think that you could just sort of be in the moment after being really mad about let's say you prepared a lesson plan that you had to totally set aside before you got into it. And the act of setting it aside, maybe that is a little bit frustrating, but instead of caring about that so much, you care way more about the value of that the learning experience and in the moment, right?
Yeah.
So it probably becomes joy. I don't know. I'm trying to just say, well, what if other things could work in there too, right?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because I do use language that makes other grown men uncomfortable sometimes. and probably a lot of grown women too. You know, and it's because I'm still a big kid deep down. And so like these kind of words don't feel threatening to me. Mr. Rogers doesn't make me uncomfortable. I feel at home watching Mr. Rogers, you know? So that's why.
A wonderful thing. And I'm not trying to critique that. I'm just trying to like throw in like other ways to attach to that same idea.
Sure.
Right.
Right.
And I guess maybe I am trying to excuse my own need for more masculinity.
Well,
because I'm starting to feel weak.
By doing that, you help make the whole audience feel a lot more comfortable about what's being talked about. So please do keep me on my toes. Keep me counterbalanced here.
Okay.
But so an openness, a sense of, well, one of the rules of improvisation is the yes and kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you listen to what the other person is just throwing at you and you say yes and you add to it rather than just say no and refute it. And now the whole rhythm of the improv routine is over, you know?
And that really fits with the whole idea of having a good learning experience, right? So people are at wherever they're at. It happened to be right after lunch. It happened to be a lot of high energy boys, but it could be different too. So it could be a lot of my experience actually, I'm not just getting into to doing teaching and workshops. I'd done quite a bit of it a few years back, that I did a lot of this to adults who, you know, during a day job in a corporate environment, sharing how to create an effective web presence. A curriculum that I created for doing that. So I didn't face as many people that were sort of wired up and ready to go. Or if they were thinking about like maybe they don't want to be here,
yeah.
I think it was in a bigger picture of, yeah, I wish I didn't have golden handcuffs. I wish I could retire sooner kind of thing. And maybe I'm going to be playing around looking at my, you know,
Blackberry.
Looking at the stock market instead of paying attention to this, you know, this long-haired web guy, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's people are at where they're at, and the learning material. I mean, I guess that's the excuse to get together, and that's the permission slip that we're all signing to say, let's do something to try to get farther on this topic, and we can do that in a way that's pretty well prepared for ahead of time. And I think the things that we're doing at Lean Into Art will be well set up for that eventually, right? I think our strength initially will be these live courses that are facilitated online, but what we're going to build into various areas and of depending on your interest and availability and style of learning, right? So you could be someone who's maybe listening to the podcast while you should be doing a spreadsheet and thinking, you know, boy, I really like that time in my life when I was doing a lot more creative projects, and pursuing this through the learning materials at Lean Into Art is tying me into that. But I guess that's just really maybe dwelling a bit too much on the whole idea of we can do this in a variety of different ways. Yeah. And the learning experience will be what it will be. But I guess that is a good way to point out that we intend to do a variety of learning experiences. But then I do want to actually bring it back to our main topic, which is styles of learning and what makes a good learner. Boy, that sounds judgmental.
But, yeah, it does. It does. I mean, effective learner. Effective, yeah. Be a way to put it. It's tough. Let me maybe try to like dig at this a little bit by pointing at the counterpoint to this of what I think stymies learning experiences. How about that?
Sure.
This is especially problematic with I run into this the most often with adults and kids who have heretofore experienced very rigid learning systems, state standards. Standard-based testing, things like that, where there's a right answer, there's a wrong answer, and everything can be measured. And then adults who, you know, they want to feel, this is a perfectly human way to feel. You want to feel like you're in control of your life and your environment, right? You want to feel like I've gotten to a point where things aren't falling apart because I'm holding it together, right? Mm-hmm. And this kind of attitude can result in a reluctance to learn, because every time a new idea or way of thinking is presented to you, it is, in a sense, a challenge to everything that you have established, you've built up around yourself, this idea that this is who I am, this is what I know, I'm in command of this. What, you want me to draw now? This is what I run into with adults all the time. It's like, oh, no, I can't even draw a stick figure. I'm like, well, yes, you can. I bet you can. If you put down a few lines, you know how to do this. This is scary. This is on paper. You're making me commit to something that will prove to the world that I am not in full command of everything around me. And now I'm resistant to everything that you're saying. What that points to for me is like a sense of wanting to control oneself, one's knowledge, or have a sense of a plateau. You know, an old joke I always tell is sort of like an anecdote joke. My wife always told me that when she was a little girl, she thought she'd wake up one morning, she'd be 25 years old. Hey, I'm a Republican. I don't need to think about it anymore. Not that Republicans don't think, but just that by defining herself with a word, now all decisions will just come easy. Because when we're a little kid, you're 8, you look at adults, it seems like they make all their decisions so effortlessly.
It's like everyone's joined different teams, and maybe they've joined multiple teams, but they sure know what teams they're on.
Exactly.
And what their role is very clearly on in every such single team. So,
And then going back to a Taoist principle, this idea of, you know, the wise man knows that he knows nothing, you know, and it's not that you empty your mind and you're a complete idiot. It's just that you recognize the fact that you don't know everything. And so everything that pops up that you don't understand or is a challenge to your way of thinking, you go, isn't that interesting? Let's figure this thing out. That is the distinction between those two modes of thinking, in my opinion, at any rate.
And I do think that a lot of us have experienced learning systems, traditional schooling that is pointed toward the more rigid approach. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I guess I don't want to commit us to trying to do that. I don't think we're going to be good at providing that learning experience if that's really what you're looking for.
Right.
Maybe we could outsource that somehow. Can you be our main teacher and not listen to students and et cetera? Someone would dig that, I guess. But so, yeah, we're not really committed to delivering that learning experience, but we empathize with it, right? And we see that, especially people who are, you know, adults and have gone through that kind of learning system would have just different expectations as far as teachers. So maybe they would be anticipating being judged more because, well, that's how it happened, right? I mean, that's in their experience. People get graded in very absolute ways. Whereas you're going about learning, I think we'll be working in some scientific ideas in Lean Into Art, without a doubt, because there's some really handy tools in the scientific method, especially when we start working in different topics that's a really strong connection, such as, let's say we do a class on game development, right? Or putting your art portfolio online and not being afraid of getting your hands dirty into some of that code and that HTML. Well, there's going to be some scientific stuff going on there. But even then,
certain things like drawing in perspective, there's a right way and a wrong way. You know when you have mathematical perspective is off, you can tell, you know, and that's not one of those soft, squishy things. So,
no, it really isn't. I guess I'm approaching that too delicately because really being intentional and having some strong methods, it permeates the arts. It actually, that's sort of a myth that I think we have the impression, and maybe I was kind of feeding into that or whatever when I was being kind of disclaimy about the idea of integrating science and art, because, well, I guess we'll be doing that quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I totally lost my train of thought, by the way.
Well, so. I think what you're talking about is assessing. You were heading in that direction, and one of the things that you brought to the table that you really emphasized, and I appreciate the fact that you did, is bringing an assessment in the form of reflection. Good teachers and good students engage in reflection periods to look at what the heck they covered. You know, and it's not a review. It's not necessarily like, okay, so, name all the capitals of the 50 states. Oh, you got that one wrong. You know, it's Boise, you know. It's a matter of having a discussion, a reflection on what the learning experience was. And language I use in my classrooms is, it doesn't have to be anything as fully formed as a question. It can be a wondering. It can be about, I wonder about this. And that's not a fully formed question. That's just sort of like, this is a thing that piques my curiosity and I don't have the words for it yet. Or you say, what surprised you? What was something that jumped out at you? Something that was an experience that made you go, hey, I didn't expect that at all. And it could be about an interaction. It could be about something you performed, something you did, something you accomplished. A way to sort of informally and casually assess the fact that something happened here, because a good learner and a good teacher is going to have an experience where stuff happens that they're not even aware of until years after the fact sometimes, right? You know,
very true. It's not like hindsight is 20/20 ideally, but that's that's a myth too. But you will gain more out of it by engaging in that, right? So you're choosing to reflect on what transpired, and chances are you're going to carry a lot more of what happened with you because you're doing that.
So like we're really driving at a sense of curiosity, receptiveness, openness. I think those are all qualities that we would put on whether you're a grumpy Gus or whether you're a cheerful weirdo. You know, either way.
Either is up to that challenge.
What's that?
Either is up to that challenge.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. You know, so and then the bottom line is that no matter where you are on your path, ladder, climb, whatever metaphor you want to use for this whole idea of investigating a creative career or creative life of some sort, an acknowledgement that there's always more to learn and a thirst for that, I think, is a real underlying sort of important quality to have in order to be a good learner. Because if you are incurious, if you don't have that desire to learn more, if you're just ready to sit on the fact that, well, I know how to do this now, so I'm just going to do this over and over again for the rest of my life, then you probably, if you're content with that, awesome. You did it. You made it through the game of life and you came out ahead. But you don't really belong in a classroom at that point anymore, right?
Yeah, chances are putting yourself in the way of the freight train of learning is a bad idea. If you set down, you set up your house and your table on that track, then that's a bad idea.
So everybody sign up for Rob's class, how to make a metaphor out of anything.
It's a skill.
But that's all part of teaching too, actually, is finding metaphors for everything, you know. So did we get around this thing? Did we do a cursory sort of chalk line around the good learner?
I think we really did. Actually, as we've been going along, I realized that we've talked around that entire topic in a way that circled it and highlights it.
Yeah. Yeah, and this topic is going to undoubtedly come up again and again and again in future Lean Into Art podcasts. As we slowly dig around all of different realms of concern that we hope to address through this service. And so I hope everybody, well, I'll give you the chance for any final thoughts, Rob. I always do this. I always close off before I give anybody a chance to throw in one last thing.
Oh, one last thing. You know what? I'm just really excited to be building this school with you, Jersey. And I called it a school, whatever it is, right?
Whatever
this,
it is.
This pile of workshops thing. I don't know.
Learning system.
I'm excited. Learning system. There you go. It certainly is that. It's a learning system. And
Me too. Me too. This is something I wanted to do for a long time. And I'm glad that we're finally, you know, jumping in and just, you know, finally just leaning off that cliff and finding out what happens once we are halfway down. But
speaking of learning.
Yeah. But that said, you know, we've put a lot of thought and a lot of organization behind it, which we just will have to wait to get through. We got to go through this first launch of 30 classes in 30 days, which you can get information about at leanintoart.com. There's a mailing list link that you can sign up for if you want updates, or you just sign up for the RSS feed, and you can sign up for, there's other podcasts that we do in this feed that we're going to be disseminating information and sort of like the ethos, philosophy, and other kinds of related thoughts associated with this, right?
Yeah, good point. It's really a lot to just, you know, encapsulate. This is a really good first launch, and we are building a lot, and we'll be sharing it in an iterative fashion. Initially, this is what we'll be doing. We have this podcast, and we'll have this 30 classes in 30 days coming up in November, and that will be a big kickoff. And there's even more coming beyond that. Some things that we're like building custom software for and stuff. There's a lot of cool stuff.
And it's not to be a tease. It's just that there's no point in bringing it up until it's fully developed and ready to be used, right?
A little bit of a tease.
Well, a little bit. Okay.
Not a meme tease. Not
it's
a meme one.
It's
going to
be more awesome
like
all the time.
At the same time. What? And whatever, it's not like you're getting like a head rub or something at the same time, like, you know, you're in a headlock going, let me go. And we're teasing you in that way. We're just saying, this is neat. It's coming.
Yeah. We're pretty juiced about it. So, okay. So the website's leanintoart.com. And then you can go there for all the information, like in terms of, how to get in touch with us via email, and subscribing to our stuff. And in the meantime, until next time, at any rate, you know, you can find us at, I'm at jdros.com or comicsaregreat.com. Hey, we're Lean Into Art on the Twitters, aren't we?
We are.
I got to check. No. I'm going to check.
We are.
Do this right now.
We do have that account.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we did.
I'm 100% certain. I was just playing coy. Yeah, we do have that. It's just that we're not using it yet, but we will be. So.
Yep.
Yeah, time to get that unthawed.
Yeah, it is indeed work. It is indeed registered. So yes, you can subscribe to that or follow that.
So time to microwave that thing unthawed. Throw in another metaphor before we go.
One last metaphor. That'll be the running gag on this thing, is we'll end with Rob's final metaphor of the day. Okay. So I've been Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on Twitter, Lean Into Art on Twitter, and.
And I'm Rob Stenzinger, also Leaning Into Art on the Twitter, and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter. And you can find me at artgeekzoo.com.
Okay, bye. Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. Questions or comments? Email us at leanintoart@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, username leanintoart. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to breathe when you lean.